The monkey is gone from our back, and now it's on to Croker. It's time to start harping on rugby. Hello, my name is Jeff Pagano, and welcome to Harping on Rugby, where with the help of some fellow fans, I get the chance to harp on what's going on with Leinster, Ireland, and the wider rugby world. Now, normally, I introduce my guest with a greater number of caps first, but this is a special occasion as we have another contributor making his 50th appearance. So many, many thanks for all your harping, and long may it continue, Mr. Mark Jackson.
Thanks very much. It feels extra special to have a fellow non-paler here with me on it as well. He's led me on this intrepid journey.
Absolutely. And of course, that build-up means my other guest today has already passed the 50 cap mark, so no need for the same kind of fanfare for just the boring old 53rd cap. Seriously, a warm welcome as well to Mr. Tom Coleman.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Mark. Congratulations, Mark. And I was just telling Jeff earlier that I look back on the Heineken Cup pod that we did after the La Rochelle defeat, and that happened to be you and me on for that one, to cover that bit of a match. So I think we deserve this cathartic experience.
Definitely deserve this. There's no question about it. Okay, so listen. So let's crack on with this, which our feature match of the week, which was, of course, Leinster v La Rochelle in the quarterfinals of the 2023-24 Investec Champions Cup, which was played at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday evening. The weather was similar to last week before we played the Tigers, but the atmosphere certainly wasn't. I often brag to friends about my so-called guaranteed free parking spot, which I always go to, without actually revealing its location, of course. But anyway, on this occasion, actually to drive around for a good while before finding somewhere, such was the crowd. And thanks in part to probably the best of all the Viking clap warm-ups performed by Leo the Lion and Mike McCarthy, Devin Toner. The place was rocking as Ross Byrne got the match underway, Tom.
Yeah, I think just to start off, I think we've been saying for all season, you know, is there any signs of the Jacques Nien Bar Leinster? And we've been looking for clues early on in the season, and a hint here of a certain type of defensive style and a hint there of... Well, there was no hint, because from the first minute of this game, the first kickoff, I think it was Ty Furlong, Dan Sheehan, and Ryan Baird just were all over the first La Rochelle exit, and that aggression that was just, you know, throughout the game for the whole match, that really set the tone. Leinster came out of the dressing room, knew exactly what they were going to do, and it sort of forced Carbarlo to a very messy exit, and they only got past the 22, and that was really the sort of the first sign of, you know, the Jack Nearbar Leinster version of Leo with Leo Cullen was visible straight away. Now the first line out didn't go too well, and you know, we were all going, here we go again, but I think it was just one of those things where we thought, here's the line outs are going to get a bit messy again, and it was a little bit messy, but when they exited off that messy line out, it was the first, they obviously were going to target Larmer under a high ball, and in fairness to Jordan Larmer, he caught it, and Teddy Thomas was on him like a flash, and he tried to be smart by sort of flipping him over back onto the La Rochelle side, but he actually ended up getting caught himself on the wrong side, and that was sort of the first infringement of the game, and that sort of gave us another entry down and straight into La Rochelle territory. And you know, that was maybe a sign of La Rochelle's discipline in the day as well. We didn't know at the time, but now looking back at the match, there was a lot of, you know, silly penalties that they'd given out. And I'd say if O'Gara's looking back at this on Monday or Tuesday or whatever he does, he'll be annoyed with some of the silly penalties. The second line out again was a bit loose, and I think it was a Gibson Park for once threw a bit of a messy pass, and they sort of bounced across, but La Rochelle regathered. And there was sign number two. I think it was Kieran Frawley jackaled in to get a turnover, and you know, he was pumped up, you know, for a guy who was just brought on as a sort of semi-late replacement, for only finding out maybe a couple of hours before the game that Hugo Keane was out, and he got a, you know, he fist bumped to the crowd, and it went back for advantage because of the previous phase, but the signs were there that this aggressive play around the ruck and around the tackling area was there to be seen again. First scrum of the game, again, it's always the great debate when you've got Andrew Porter and Uni Antonio. But the scrum was solid. There was no sign of any weakness there. But early on, I think the first 5 minutes of the game were probably slightly frustrated given the territory we've had. We didn't get some sort of score on the board. But I think, as I said, the positivity was there was about just how aggressive our defensive line speed was, how we were hassling, harrying La Rochelle on their exits. And, you know, we were really contesting that first ruck. You know, it's something we've been saying all season on the pod since Neen Barra's come on board. But yeah, it was definitely very aggressive at every ruck. And so much so, I think La Rochelle straight offside. And that was really our first score of the game. Ross just sort of slotted over for 3-0. Off the restart, we got a decent enough exit for once. I'm sure Mark in the second part will be pulling his hair out with some of the penalties we gave away in the sort of second part of the first half on some of our exits. But it was a great chase on that good exit. It was a great chase by Larmour again down Leeds, sort of hunted down Leeds, and he was so aggressive in sort of hassling and chasing all day. I think it was one of his best games in blue for a long time in a role you wouldn't have thought he would have done. You know, we think of Larmour, you know, the phone box stepping and beating defenders, you know, willy nilly, you know, six in the space of 5 meters. But it was a different type of play. Why he had such a good game, and it was that defensive play. He was good under the high ball, even though La Rochelle didn't test him as much as they maybe should have. But just I thought Lowe and himself completely outplayed Noel and Teddy Thomas. It wasn't even a contest on just their desire, their fight, just that aggressiveness to not be, for inverted commas, be the weak link in the defence when you've got somebody like Robbie Henshaw and Osborne inside you. You know, on principle, you think, well, I could be the slightly the weak link in the chain, but the two guys were on our wing were outstanding, I thought, in every facet of the game and in defence. La Rochelle sort of started to creep a little bit into the game. That I think Jason Jenkins sort of fell for a little bit of Caraballo cuteness at the ruck, where Jenkins was sort of having a nibble and he was told no, but immediately Caraballo picked the ball and ran straight into him. So it was that's a guy that's been around the block quite a few times, and you know, the big lock that was shutting him standing where he was standing, and that sort of give La Rochelle, really, that was about 10 minutes into the game, their first entrance into our 22 of note. I think another sign of how well the day might go now, looking back in hindsight, was obviously La Rochelle off the penalty that they got, line out, and it was a bit of a maul. But Leinster fractured it quite well. It wasn't quite as highlighty real as Joe McCarthy's last one in the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game. But this one was, it's still fractured, and really they were going nowhere. And that's difficult considering if you look at the profile of size of that La Rochelle team, that pack, and how well how many games they've played together. Just even to disruptors and fractured it, just shows how determined Leinster were, you know. So I thought Joe Mack did very well there. I think the next part of the game, I think Tadhg Furlong introduced himself in the game. This was a bit of 2018 Tadhg Furlong. He put in a massive hit on Skelton and then followed another one up on, I think, Ulton Delan within the space of a few minutes. And he sort of, you know, the little highlight, mini highlight reel in about 30 seconds, but he sort of epitomised what I've been saying for the first 10 or 15 minutes of the game, how aggressive Leinster were. And we really targeted their, inverted commas, for both ways, big players, going after Skelton directly, not giving him any. He's not a great ball carrier anyway, but he's definitely some guy you don't want to get on the front foot, because he sort of sucks in defenders more than anything else. It's not that he's making great yards. It takes so many to get him down. But I think Leinster went after him pretty sharpish. I think we kicked loosely then. There was one instance shortly after this. It was the first little bad exit we had. And I think it was Leeds made a good run back, which he has. He obviously is a winger. And there was some nice interplay with him and Caraballo, and Teddy Thomas ended up getting into the 22. But again, you know, repeating myself about work rate, I think it was Jordan Larmour that got the tackle in on Leeds initially after he chased down, I think it might have been Frawley's kick clearance that was a little bit loose to Leeds. And Larmour again chased down, tackle Leeds, but Leeds was able to get the offload to Caraballo, and Caraballo was able to get Teddy Thomas away. But who was the one getting back doing the turnover at the next ruck? to turn over Teddy Thomas. It was Jordan Larmour, sort of just, you know, absolutely. And you know, he took a few hits. There was a few big bodies coming in from the forwards for La Rochelle, and he got up a bit gingerly and a bit groggy. But you know, it's sort of just repeating what I said. That's what he brought to the game in the first 15 minutes. That different style. We probably haven't seen a Jordan in all of his career. You know, we've all watched nearly every minute of every game he's played. And I suppose if somebody's looking for a sort of a microcosm of the Jacques Nina Barway, I think looking at Jordan Larmour's performance on Saturday really highlights, you know, what Nina Bar wants from his back line, especially on a defensive setup. So, you know, the fact that he sort of reinvented Jordan to a certain degree on the, you know, looking at the game on Saturday, I think that's just sort of proof positive of where Nene Barra wants his team to go. Other than that, we had some nice line of play after that as well. I think it was a lovely grubber through by James Lowe. It was just a little bit too bit unlucky. It just went a bit too long, but again, I thought our exits generally were poor against Leicester. Some of those sort of decision making to kick, to turn defences around but it was a lot sharper, I thought, on Saturday. It was obviously something that seems they must have worked on, because even though sometimes we ended up giving the ball away, maybe we were still forcing La Rochelle quite deep and making their back three, which was a little bit of a, you know, a question marks over the back three before the game, especially with, you know, the news as Donal Lenihan calls him Bruce Doolan was out, which was huge for La Rochelle, but Bruce Doolan was missing. So I think a lot of our kicks was on point. We either turned the La Rochelle defence, or we made yards and sort of forced them, you know, forced them to exit messily more than anything else. But I think we started to find numbers and gaps just in general play after that. Lowe was very hungry. He was chasing down sort of Jack Noel, putting a lot of pressure on him. And I suppose this was the first time we've seen Leinster really in really sustained attack. And this was coming off all the play that we'd seen in the first sort of 15 minutes. We were pressurising them into making mistakes and we were getting territory. And that's very hard to keep out. Eventually, their defence will start to crack. And that's what really happened. Leinster were happy to sort of go coast to coast. I think it was Larmour. Larmour was on one wing, nearly got in on one side. He sort of stepped off his wing, nearly got in to about a couple of metres. And then it was just sort of some really good solid passing. It was a lovely little tip pass by Ross Byrne. It took a bit of a heavy hit for his troubles onto James Lowe, and James Lowe just sort of slid into the corner. And it wouldn't be the first time that
Ross Byrne definitely wasn't a forward pass either way.
No. We won't say anything about that. But it wasn't the first time that Ross took a hit in this game, because there was plenty afterwards. But the final thing I'd say before handing over to Mark, I thought just the other part, you know, we look at Jordan Larmour as a sort of microcosm of what went well for Leinster. I think Nienbar and Leo getting Ross to stand so flat in the game as well. Because Ross's tendency to be a bit of a pocket 10, but he was far more on the line. Like, he's still not the best mover on his feet, you know what I mean? He's still quite, when he gets it, but he was standing a lot flatter on the La Rochelle, and that's why he was on the end of some massive hits from Sutteni, and Butty had caught him at one stage, and even Ibrahim hit a little dirty shithouse hit on him in the second half, but he was standing a lot flatter, and that was sort of pulling defenders onto him, because La Rochelle were going after him. But look, I think at that stage, really annoying part of the game was, obviously we'd scored a try, we converted, we'd gone 10-0 up, and then straight from the restart, Doris caught, I think it was, Doris or McCarthy caught, and Doris was pinged for sealing off. And it's a killer when you get seven and you just give 3 points really cheaply away. And that sort of made a 10-3. It was just, it was very frustrating. I know what happened again when Mark will speak about it, but it was really annoying to give away those 3 points and that sort of left a 10-3 at the end of the sort of first 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'll say about that first quarter is that I actually forgot, when I was setting you up there, I forgot that Hugo Keenan was was dropped out at the at the last minute, and that's a kind of a compliment to the lads that that stepped up for him, especially Frawley as coming in at fullback. Is it's not because we kind of jinxed it in our preview saying how important it was for La Rochelle to be missing Duran, and he was there sort of as big for them as Keenan was for us, and then fortunately Hugo couldn't play. But yeah, the feature of that first quarter I think was our defense. You had that Joe Max steal, those two big furlong tackles. You had the Larmer steal, and just our general, even when they did break our line, our scrambling has been top-notch recently as well. But like you say, we got that try. There was that great last that pass on from Ross Byrne. I think it's important that we stress that. They say he got player of the match and he took some great place kicks off the tee, but it wasn't just because of that. He had a specific role. He knew he was going to get hit. He took the hits when they were coming in, and he was able to get the passes on the flat, very flat passes on when it was needed. And on those restarts, it was frustrating. But one thing I noticed looking is that obviously this was a thing that La Rochelle were going to do. Their restarts were very quick. They were ready for those restarts as soon as the, you know what I mean? They were at the halfway line almost before the ball was going near the post, and they didn't waste any time at all. That's no excuse. We should be ready, but this was a ploy. They did it, and it worked several times. And that wasn't, as you say, hand over to Mark now, that wasn't the last time, but it was 10-3 going into that second quarter.
Yeah. Tom hit many nails on the head there, you know, with the defensive stuff. Ross was epic, you know, at 29, I think Ross is 29. It's a very hard thing for somebody at 29 to change from being a pocket 10 to playing flat. And so fair play to him. You know, we've always had a sort of a growl for Harry over Ross over the years amongst the Harbin group. But, you know, I thought Ross had one of his best ever Leinster games. As you said, he took a lot of cheap hits. But the second quarter, we had another incident after we scored a try. But the build-up to that try was a very interesting from how we played. We got down into their 22 pretty quickly, actually. And we spent about 10 minutes looking to score. We went coast to coast, as Tom said. We had lots of probing runs. We had some good kicks forward, especially from Larmer. And, you know, we spent 10 minutes looking to score, trying to batter our way through more than anything else. And we got stopped hard. You know, we ended up with some good runs in that series, from the tap penalty when I'm surprised we didn't take the three, to be honest with you. We were building a score quite nicely. And in past experiences, 3 points could have been the difference in that game. And I was a little bit nervous around this sort of time where we've gone and put a hell of a lot of effort into a lot of phases, and they look pretty comfortable stopping us. Will Connors butchered a try on the far side. He had a pretty odd game where before you'd seen him go around smashing people by the knees and lower, and you didn't see too many tackles from Will Connors. Maybe they were just avoiding him because they knew how good he was at the chop tackle. He had a solid outing, don't get me wrong, but that was a perfect 2-on-1, and you would have backed James Lowe to finish that in the corner for sure. Then we came back across the pitch again, and Joe McCarthy probably had the best carry during that period, as he did for when we needed it, two or 3 yards. He got us over the gain line a lot during the game, as well as having a great performance out of touch. But, you know, that was a sort of a 7 or 8 minute period where I was getting kind of nervous because we needed to come away with something there. You know, before the game, we would have said, every time we get in their 22, come away with points, be it 3, be it 5, be it 7. You know, it's something coaches all across the world will say, you get into 22, the P's of the 22 are patience, points, possession, but points being the main one. You must come away with something. You're not going to work that hard for 5-6 minutes and keep the ball in play. But in the end, you're making them tackle. They're a big pack. You're making them work. You're making them work. And it might seem pointless to some people, no pun intended, but if you're putting pressure on that team for 7-8 minutes, that might not get you points there and then, but it'll get you points 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later. And you could see the La Rochelle boys were blown a little bit. And then after not taking three almost in front of the posts, Ross strikes one from 46, 47 meters as if it was straight in front of the posts about 23, 24 minutes, or sorry, a bit later than that, about 30 minutes into the game. But then again, we go 13-3 ahead and almost a carbon copy, except this time Doris takes the ball, goes forward a yard, but he's met by Bhatia almost immediately. And Bhatia, I'm not sure he was supporting his body weight, but he showed enough lifting of the ball off the floor to Mr. Dixon to almost instantaneously go penalty. And Astoy kicked a relatively easy penalty, and we're looking at 13-6. And you think, damn it, we've just gone again, score for score, bit of a coach killer that. And you know, we got back into their half relatively easy. We had a really good break from Frawley, who had a cracking game down the side. And surprisingly, when he got tackled by Aldrich, I was surprised we didn't actually take a look at that TMO. It was a pretty high head clash. It wasn't dangerous and it wasn't massively impactful. But what it was is we really attacked the blind side quite well down here. McCarthy then gets the ball, lovely little tip on inside to Lowe. Lowe gets forward, and then, as we see on the replay, puts the ball out of his hand onto Gibson Park's shoulder, knocks it forward, regathers, and under the sticks from a try from nothing, really. You know, after spending a long time in their 5-10 meter channel and not getting too much purchase out of it. You could see Leinster score a try like that. You couldn't see that from La Rochelle on the way the game was going at the time. You know, how have they scored against us? It's usually up the middle. It's usually offloads from smashing runs from Dante and Satini and Bhatia. And those three were pretty much held in check for the most game, especially the two centres. Dante's fallen off the world this year. Is O'Gara picking him on form? Probably not. He's picking him on reputation and past performances. And we hear that all the time, class is permanent, whatever, but Dante's done nothing for France or La Rochelle since the World Cup. He might just be knackered. You know, he's had a pretty tough year, played a lot of rugby. But yeah, to that try, you know, really good support lines again from Gibson Park. He's all over the place at the moment. You know, like even watching DuPont today, he's in his shadow at the moment. And if he's not getting into every team of the year, there's something wrong. You know, he's just been superb in everything, apart from that one Tom Brady pass that he had in the first 10 minutes or so off the line out. But we forgive him for that. He's done pretty well for the last few weeks. So then that gets us Ross. Just another comment on Ross Burns. Kicking off the tee has improved immensely. He seems to have changed his technique. I don't know if anybody else has noticed that. He seems to be running off a much shorter run-up, a much straighter connection with the ball, not approaching it from the side like a lot of kickers do. And you know, the last couple of weeks, he's slotted most of them anyway. So that's 20. That's 20 points to six. Then the next sort of, we get back down again, and we probably should have had a couple of more scores, but we kick one more penalty to get it to 23-6, leading up to nearly half time, and we had about 50 seconds to just see it out and get out of the half with a 17-point lead. But we mess up the exit. We allow them to get back into our half. Couple of penalties, get them into the corner. The first one we stopped illegally. And if you notice there, that they used the LAN and the six, I can't quite a lot in the line out, and used the two big forklift trucks that they have in Skelton and Antonio to lift and to drive that forward. But we didn't seem to have a purchase on the first one. We stopped quite well. I thought it was quite a harsh penalty, to be honest with you. But the second one they had in the corner, they got it to sort of six in the line out, six position in the line out, as such at the back. And if you get that set quite well, if you drive from the back of the line out, it's a very, very hard one to stop. And they eventually got over, and the young Lou said, who had a pretty decent game actually. He was spotted putting it down by Dixon before, without even going to a TMO. So fair play. I like referees that give decisions like that straight away, even if it is against us. It gets the game going and keeping it flowing. He's not my favorite referee by any matter of means, but I actually thought he had a pretty decent game overall. And then the halftime score was 23-13, when it probably should have been 23-6 by the time we had gotten out of it.
Yeah, it was a tentative end to the half, but like you say, for the most part, it was going well for Leinster. I mean, I like the way you say that we were tiring them out by making them make all those tackles. It was obviously a tactic, because I mean, we know all the traveling they've done. I mean, it's a long way up from Cork to Dublin, but no, seriously, they I think, yeah, it was a curious decision to go for the tap. I mean, we've seen Leinster do that many times in the past, but I also think they really butchered that tap as well. They did a really fancy move, and it's like, my thing is, if you're going to tap a ball from 5 meters out, the first tackle has got to get you at least two or three of those meters to the line. And with all whatever they did, the first hit was, I think, was actually behind the 5 meter line, and that was going nowhere. But there was also
I blame Will. I blame Will Connors. Apparently, he's the mastermind behind a lot of these tap penalty moves that came out.
Some of them, they do look good, and it can look intricate. But when it doesn't work, you do all that stuff,
it's a bit different doing it versus the Dragons. No offense, than it is doing it against a block of absolute monsters.
Yeah, I think if Dan Sheehan had just tapped it himself, he at least gets to within three, maybe 2 meters of the line, and you can work from there. But anyway, it's easy for us to say here, I suppose. But there was that big call on that scrum as well. What was that? It was in the 22, and there was a knock on, and so we had the scrum, but then we booted it, but because it went dead,
yeah,
he said there's no advantage.
That was a huge call. There's a lot of people moaning about that, because the way Lowe connected with it, you thought, okay, we might decent enough. But then on the bounce, it did go dead. And I would say probably 9 times out of 10, the advantage is over as soon as that ball reaches halfway. As soon as it reaches a halfway line, especially, it's not like it's a penalty we're coming back for. It's a knock on. You know, that was a great steal by Baird in the line out. But, you know, we had a sort of a 6 or 7 minute period there, sorry, less, 2 or 3 minutes, where they had a couple of kicks to the corner where we're pretty kickable. And in past games, you would have seen messages from O'Gara to come down, take the three. You know, they went for it. It's not like they haven't come back with a 17-point lead against them before. And that's a pretty strong wind Leinster had in the first half. You know, the ball was traveling a long way in the air. I think we got away with that one, to be brutally honest with you. I think we were lucky, and you could see one of the many moans from Aldred that he had during the game. You know, he's a great player. I don't think he's a fantastic captain, to be honest with you. He's a bit, and this is coming from somebody who had Johnny Sexton as captain for 3 years, you know. So we've had our captain criticized for moaning at referees, but I thought Aldrich was pretty in the moaning myrtle sort of area of captaincy, and possibly one or two decisions that were 50-50 didn't go their way, because you know you're painting a picture to the referee and you're like, oh Jesus, not this captain again in my ear. Yeah. Can he just leave it? for a couple of minutes. But it was a big call. That was a big call for us.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously there'd be no guarantees that they would have done anything with the scrum there, but just the whole purpose of the pressure and because we, you know, and then we built that 17-point lead, that it just had to be that number, didn't it? At the time we're thinking like, oh God, and then of course they came back and got that score before the end. So, you know, things were that really made that really left the atmosphere around the Aviva kind of, you know, we're not quite sure what's going to happen next, but still, you know, we did have a lead. We'd earned that lead. And like you say, the halftime score was Leinster 23, La Rochelle 13. Well, before we return to the pod, first, a little reminder of all the different places you'll find us in the Ruggersphere. First of all, we have a radio slot every Friday after the 5 o'clock news on Dublin South, 93.9 FM. Then when it comes to online, as well as our main site at harpinandrugby.com, we also have a presence on X, formerly known as Twitter. We're on YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and new this season, we're on both Threads and Blue Sky. So if you're on any or all of those platforms, please do give us a follow to check out our full range of Leinster and Ireland rugby content. So after that score just before the break, we not only knew we needed a good start to the second half, with La Rochelle taking the restart, we also knew they'd be going after us right from the kickoff, Tom.
I'll have to go and put a new name for this particular quarter because I'm not sure I get to talk about a quarter like this. And apologies if I leave some bits out. I'll rely on you, Jeff, to pull me back in, because this was like a championship quarter dipped in gold and rolled in crusted diamonds.
Okay. Yeah, we had to carve out a try just so that Mark could have something to talk about for his last bit.
Yeah, this was it's interesting. I obviously was at the game yesterday, we're losing track of time. It was at the game yesterday, and it's only looking back on it this morning. You know, I listened to Andrew Goodman at halftime, and he was coming off at halftime, and he was just asked about what to focus on, and was discipline, which I thought Leinster's discipline was good in the first half, apart from stupid penalties. And the big thing he mentioned was exits. And he was like, he mentioned exit three or four times. Obviously, they'd seen what myself and Mark and yourself have touched on. And straight away, we had a lovely clean exit from start to the second half. Jamie Osborne, who had a cracking game at 12. This guy looks like he has 40 caps. That's unbelievable to say Gary Ringrose and Charles Natai weren't really missed or, you know, an All Black a guy who's got, I don't know how many caps Ringer has for Ireland now, but, you know, Henshaw obviously continued his great form at 13, but Osborne just brings that. I know Natai has a good kicking game as well, as does Robbie, in fairness to him. But Osborne's boot, he found a lovely touch finder, just sailed over poor Morning Myrtle's head, Aldridge on the line, just to steal Mark's phrase. And it was just a lovely touch finder. And I think there, obviously, that message was drilled into them at half time about get your freaking exit sorted out and don't be giving cheap entrances into the to give us La Rochelle sort of entrance into our territory. But it's interesting, there was a couple of lineouts. There was one for La Rochelle next, and I'm only mentioning them because both of them tried what I'd call the Josh move. So you set up, and in this instance it was La Rochelle. Obviously Osborne had found touch, so it was a La Rochelle lineout. And just when you're coaching or looking at the finer details in the game, this is where La Rochelle were slightly off on what we're trying to do and where Leinster were on what we're trying to do. And it's little battles like this. So La Rochelle had a lineout, and Aldridge, what I'd call, was filling in the Josh role, where he's just the receiver standing off the lineout. But in some ways, they were half doing what they were meant to be doing. And he sort of peeled around the corner and he just ran into a blue wall of players. You know, I think it was Baird, McCarthy and Porter came in and had a big steal for a line, a big steal. So that's not very joined up thinking. You know what I mean? If you've seen that at any level, you'd be thinking, you know, what the hell are we doing there? What was the plan there? Somebody's gone off script. That's what it seemed like from the stands and rewatching the game. So obviously, Andrew Porter had a massive steal, which he thrown over at the ruck. And we were able to kick back down into their territory. And in this instance, Leinster deployed the same move with Will Connors in what we call the Josh role as a receiver. But Leinster were a lot more fluid and knew what they were doing. Connors was able to carry a bit, and then the ball was directly gone out the back. And it was immediately putting pressure and stress in that La Rochelle defence. So, you know, you'd look at the Ryan Bear try, and you go, wow, what a try, what a start, because that's what came immediately off it. But it's really re-looking back at the details about one team not running a line out properly, or at least going off script or something. Leinster in this instance been able to run it properly, and you know, it's just those details where La Rochelle were off and Leinster were completely on it, so they knew what they were at and just were better drilled, I think, on the day. There was, you know, leading up to the try itself, I think, again, we mentioned Ross getting a couple of really big hits. In part of the move leading up to it, Sutani gave him an awful hit, like nearly broke him in two, and he was gingerly getting up. It was a legal hit, but it was obviously a sign that they were going after him all day, and it was a sign, what we've mentioned already, how flat Ross was standing, and he was putting his body in a position where he was going to be taking those hits. But he was getting the pass away. That was the key thing. It wasn't like the ball was flying back out or getting knocked on, or he took the hits, and I think in every instance he got the pass away. And that's really what you want your 10 to do. In the sort of phases afterwards, we sort of went open side three or four times, really stretched them way over to the east stand, and then we came back on the blind side. You could see Leinster were trying to suck them in these phases, pulling them around on the open side. And that's, you know, if the camera had zoomed out at that stage and took a screenshot, I bet there was about 12 La Rochelle players all on the sort of east hand side of the pitch, and that was the reason for that. And very quickly we came back on the blind side. Furlong's lovely soft hands pulled it back to Robbie, and went out to back to Larmour, and then out to Lowe, and then Lowe flicked it onto Baird. And you know, we love the side of Ryan Baird getting a bit of open country. Has time made a fairly piss poor attempt of a tackle on him.
He's definitely doing his coach's tackle technique on that.
Yeah,
one.
he was. And he was playing out of position. You know, sometimes people are going to underestimate how difficult fullback can be, because you're literally the last man in defence. And he was definitely a little bit turnstiley with his attempt. And Bird went through him fairly easily. And we sort of had James Lowe been sort of the coach running alongside him, pointing him towards the inside to make the kick a bit easier. And it was just an unbelievable start to the game. An unbelievable start. It was just, we were on point. We were really aggressive. We got our exits right, and we stretched in defence. Good passing, good offloading, and you know, it was like 2 minutes in, and there was a try. We just undid all La Rochelle, undid our own poor work that Mark had described at the end of the first half. We were all annoyed about giving away that try and some of our exits on the penalties, and it was really statement of intent by Leinster. Just sort of, you know, we're not going to let repeat, you know, whatever learnings they had in that hurt from last May, they, you know, that's what the sort of the bank of knowledge you have to sort of fall back on and try and come out of the dressing room at halftime and fix the little things that was going wrong. And immediately they did. And it was just a cracking start to the start of the second half. Unfortunately, in all that play, Ker Barlow, just, you know, poor tackle attempt. He got his head on the wrong side and he caught Larmour's hip. I presume it was head on hip, and he just got sparked out. And that took a good few minutes. You know, even the Leinster players were down on in front of the south stand, going through passing drills and keeping warm. And you could tell some of the Larish, even though you couldn't really see from the stand, but you could tell it was serious enough. He wasn't moving. Big Skelton was down, and James Lowe obviously knows him from New Zealand. He probably paid certain teams in him, Maori, way back in the day, and they were quite concerned. So, but I suppose the good news was, look, the big round of applause from everybody was there. You know, when he went off, and the good news was, it sort of filtered through after the game that he was grand. He was up and talking in the dressing room afterwards, and he's fine. Nobody likes to see that. It's just, but unfortunately, it was just poor technique. He sort of, some people have dominant sides where they tackle on one side, whether it be left or right. And I think at the last second, he just tried to go back onto his dominant side, and his just head went in the wrong place. And that's just what happens. It's why we do drills with minis when they're under six and under sevens, about just getting your head on the wrong side. But who am I to say? But look, it was very unfortunate of him, and he's a big loss. He's such a class player. He's really played well against us over the last few years. And I knew it'd be Gibson Park's biggest test against Ker Barlow, but even when he was on the pitch, I thought Gibson Park, you know, definitely outplayed him. And but you know, it was good to see that he was fine. After that, really, was the man Teddy. I always try and struggle to pronounce his name. Ibrahimine is how do you pronounce that guy's name? He was what was Racing.
Close enough.
I'm just going to call him Teddy.
We'll allow it. Yeah, there you go.
We'll allow Teddy. Straight from the try, obviously Ross then eventually after the time delayed, he kicked the conversion. It was a good while before they were able to get Carvalho off the pitch. And next thing, Hastoy kicks out in the full, and it was sort of a scrum back on the halfway line. So like La Rochelle really started off the half as bad as they possibly could. And because so much happened this quarter, I for once I had to write some sort of extensive notes to try and remember everything. But like I sort of have two words here with a lot of exclamation marks going, the scrum. And because off that restart that La Rochelle kicked out in the full, obviously it was a scrum back to Leinster on the halfway line, and the pack just put in a mighty scrum against La Rochelle. Just Furlong was on fire. He was starting to put pressure on that young loose head. And in fairness to Porter, he was keeping it good and straight, and there was no issue. Antonio wasn't getting any change off him. I thought it's worth mentioning at this time because he'll probably go off shortly. I thought Jason Jenkins had a really good 50 minutes, both in the tight and in the line out, and some sort of stuff he did around the loose. I thought he probably had his best game in blue. He was obviously charged by Nienaber, obviously pretty took him aside and in a South African 1-1 and said, look, man, this is where you have to front up. I don't know what conversation went on. I'm only surmising here, but he did have his best game of blue, and he was good in the tie. He locked down well with McCarthy in the scrum. But that scrum was huge. It was just, a sort of statement that followed on from the try, and La Rochelle looked a bit under pressure at this stage. Just said they kicked out in the full. Even at the back of the scrum, Gibson Park was full of confidence at this stage. He threw one through his legs, it was Antoine Dupont style completely. And Bautia put a massive hit on Ross Bourne when he received it, nearly creased him. So this, I don't know how many times we've mentioned this, but yeah, they were definitely going after Ross, but he continued, we'll keep saying it. It sounds like we're repeating, but he continued to stand flat and take the hits and pass it on. So, if anyone's looking for why Ross Bourne got man of the match, there was a load of standout performances, but Ross's play it was outstanding and brave. At this stage, Leinster were really cooking, and it was only early into the second half. It's a lovely interplay. I know we ended up with a little bit of a knock on but that's because we were pressurising them in attack, and Teddy with the surname I won't try and pronounce. He did put in a peach of a kick from a sort of a clearance from a knock-on that got us within 5 metres, or got them within 5 metres of, it wasn't a 50-22 because it was carried back in, but it got them within 5 metres of our line. But, it was about the only good thing Teddy E did the whole game. But it was a class kick. Why I mentioned this phase of play was I did like Leinster's exit. We shortened the line-out. If people looked, we shortened the line-out and Baird sort of did it, not call it a dummy jump, but it's like he jumped out of the way. When you were in school and you do piggy in the middle, or I don't know what that, where you jump over the person in front of you. But Tighe was able to slot by him and lift. I think it was Jenkins at this stage. So it was a four-man line out. It looked like we were going to a pot at the front with Baird, but very quickly Baird steps out of the way and Furlong is able to slot from the one position in and lift Jenkins. And it gave a really clean exit. And going back to what Goodman had said at halftime, or going off at halftime about getting exits, getting simple. And I thought it was a nice, lovely, simple play that shortened their line out, made them less contestable, and it was good, clean ball and worked. And just those are the sort of details that, on another day, you might be 8 men in the line out, you screw it up a bit because you try to overdo something, and then you're back under pressure and you're on 22 with a knock on. But I thought those sort of things, Leinster were a lot smarter with, and really didn't give La Rochelle any foothold in our 22 at all. So that was really good. There was a few bodies at that stage. We were wondering, Dan Sheehan was hobbling a bit from a previous phase. Ryan Bird was on the ground, I don't know if it was cramp. And Ohia West, who had come on for Leeds, I think, at that stage, he was hobbling a bit. So just showed how physical that battle was out there. So yeah, it was just sort of super aggressive trying to exit out of there as well. When we got out, I think Frawley sort of epitomised that again. He swallowed up Teddy Thomas in fact, a charge, you know, straight off line speed off the defence, and sort of swallowed up Teddy Thomas and got him back sort of 3 or 4 meters. You know, so there's lots of, I thought it was sort of relentless defence as well, as much as everything else that was going well in attack. I thought that La Rochelle eventually got the ball back, even though we were pressurising, and what sort of came off that eventually was Gibson Park, above all people, with a massive steal at a breakdown, which, you know, we've already seen Jordan Larmour making a turnover at the breakdown, now we've Gibson Park. So I think there was the signs that was something was going right for Leinster, which two guys like that were going to get steals at the breakdown. Just on that, I thought Leinster's tactics, which we've seen all year, is, you know, people sometimes wonder about that sort of pot of three, if you can visualise it, on the outside, Gorry rushing up. But what he's doing, he's forcing the ball carrier back inside into heavier traffic. And you can see that was developing over the course of the season. And it's a lot more fine-tuned now. It doesn't look as, how would you call it? It doesn't look like the outside shooter looks like a lunatic running out of the line, which it seemed a little bit in the early part of the season. It seems to be a lot more refined and timed better. Obviously, it's something they've been practicing hugely, but it's a massive tactics where they're able to shove that ball carrier back in, and all of a sudden they're then been swallowed up by two, generally a tackler, and then somebody who'll turn over them. And this is what happened in that instance where Gibson Park, I think it was a great photo by one of the info guys, I'm sure it'll be online if people look up, which, you know, Gibson Park comes up with this big aggressive smile, and I don't know if it was Sheehan and somebody else beside him standing over a couple of prone La Rochelle bodies that was after the turnover. It's just sort of summed up what we'd seen for the sort of first 50 minutes of the game, how aggressive Leinster's defence was. Again, after we sort of exited out of there, I mentioned our friend Teddy again, put a really stupid cheap hit on Ross Byrne, like it was something you'd seen in a junior match down in Westmead. He just, the ball was away and he just stuck the shoulder into him. Like, he just knocked Ross off balance, but like, really stupid penalty. That's a guy who's obviously who's frustrated with his performance and things weren't really going right with him. But it was one of those things that coach would be screaming at, that really dumbass penalty to give away. Just gives Leinster sort of another sort of entrance back into the La Rochelle territory. We set up a little mini mall, I think, off that penalty after we got off Teddy, and it ended up in a little bit of a knock-on on the blind side, I think, under the west end. But again, Leinster trying to stretch that La Rochelle defence, and a lot of the passes were zipping and flat. And it's always a little bit frustrating when you don't finish those types of things off, but you could see Leinster were playing right on that line. So it's not like, sometimes teams are cautious, that the backs are, you know, set off the line a bit, set back a bit. You know, it's a lot safer thing to do. But Leinster were really playing on the line and forcing that La Rochelle into making tackles and forcing them to try and see what our reads were. So inevitably, sometimes they end up with knocks on. To sort of finish off the sort of the golden quarter, we got another penalty. I think it was again our friend Teddy, who was on the deck at the time, and he tackled Josh van der Fleer, who'd make a little bit of a little break on the blind side. And yeah, he was obviously on the deck and pulled him down, and it was another penalty. So Teddy wasn't.
Yeah, the ref had to explain that to Aldred about three times. I mean, I was just like, it was pretty obvious. I thought Josh ran at him, so to give him, almost gave him no choice but to try to grab him.
Yeah, it was just it was just summed up his sort of, you know, when he came on, it just some sort of summed up his play. As I said, he did that one really good thing where he kicked within 5 meters of our line, but everything else after that was poor play by him. That sort of gave us a Leinster another entrance into their territory. I think we went at this stage, Maloney was on at that stage, and we were straight off the top. Again, Van der Fleer was on at this stage. So we're straight off the top. And this is the play where I'd worth mentioning Ross. There was some lovely passes put through by Ross and by Osborne just off the shoulder of each other. Like, that's really, you know, it's just what I was saying in the previous phase. I know in the previous phase we're low, knocked on. We were stressing that defence and shooting, really dragging defenders in. And it sort of paid off in the next phase. We put Josh, the two lads put Josh through a hole. And lovely line break. We got within a couple of meters. Gibson Park made a little snipe. He got very close. And then Larmer made his little snipe off this next phase on the narrow side. He needed to get in. Porter again sniped around on the narrow side. It was knocked on, so we had advantage. It was knocked out of his hands as he was going towards the line. So, you know, Leinster 2 meters out, and then you give them penalty advantage, or at least knock on advantage. They're going to try something, and Ross, I don't know if he was trying to find Robbie, but it was sort of ended up in a bit of a bounce pass, which can be a bit of a nightmare to defend at best of times. But he flicked on to Lowe, and then obviously Lowe, he obviously was a huge sort of 30-meter pass. It was going to bounce anyway, and Dan Sheehan was out in open country. And not even Dante, even though he's out of form, as Mark rightly says, was going to stop him from there. And he sort of slid into the corner. And, you know, that made it 35-13. Just outstanding quarter of rugby from Leinster in all facets. Just defence, attack, pressurising them into mistakes. They were, you know, their heads were gone to a certain degree at this stage. It just was just such good play. And then Pearl Ross hit the post. His kick just was slightly off. He was hobbling a little bit, I think, from one of the previous hits. And I know Frawley ended up taking a subsequent hit or kick. But yeah, it was just you know, the game was done. I know we're all nervous, but the game was done then. Once Dan Sheehan, somebody asked me who couldn't see the game, he had a previous engagement. He watched the game with the lady. He says, "When did you think we won?" And I says, "When Sheehan went in, I thought that was it." I know it's probably easier to say that in hindsight now, but yeah, look, that 20 minutes after half time, Leinster were just electric on everything they did. You know, there was very few mistakes, and at that stage, La Rochelle were a beaten team, and it probably summed up by our friend Teddy's sort of indiscretion, sort of summed up their play. And you know, Aldrich, who's a class player, you know, it's already him and our own Kellen Doris. They're the three guys we all speak about in World Rugby at number 8. So, like, there's no disrespect to him, but he was in the ref's ear all. It's only when you listen back on the game, and you're right, when he was trying to explain that infringement that Teddy done with Josh on the ground, that sort of summed it up. Larry Shell were at. They're frustrated. They were questioning everything. Everything was chirpy, bark, 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 bark. You know, if it was James Ryan, there'd be like a 15-thread thing on Twitter about how James Ryan's such a shit captain. But no, nobody's going to mention
Teddy. See, if only they had a co-captain, you see, they could have gone to an alternative. You see, we provide the alternative for you. You see, that's the service Leinster do, you know?
And don't get me wrong, he Aldridge had a bad day. That happens. And he had a bad day, but it's okay saying... It's okay commenting on and saying he had a bad day, because he had a bad day with the referee, a bad day in by his standards. But yeah, his refereeing was, or his captainship was, yeah, he just was all over the shop. But look, at that stage, it sort of summed up why I'm saying I thought La Rochelle were beaten at that stage.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, and it's been a feature for the matches we've been covering, like, for the past year or so, whether it's Leinster or Ireland. As fans, we are nervous, and rightly so, given the opposition, given what's happened before. But the players themselves, they basically just stand up to the situation. And I think nothing says that more than the way this half started. Like we said, La Rochelle got that score just before halftime. They'd reduced the lead to 10. They had the ball in their hands to start the second half. We knew how they'd put us under pressure. We knew how restarts had gone for us up to that stage. And so much hinged on that opening. And again, as much as we want to forget that final from last season, and one of our biggest problems was just getting out of our own 22, people that we rely on for big exits, and we just couldn't get the distance on them, couldn't execute the way we wanted. So there was really a lot hinging on that very first exit. And Jamie Osborne put it like a mile from where he was, and it was actually into the La Rochelle half. That was a great clearance.
I think it's only in hindsight we look back at the December game when we won down on La Rochelle, the Charlie Natai's style of play, which is a little bit similar to Osborne. His exiting, you know, was able to relieve a huge amount of pressure, because Hugo isn't a natural kicker. Obviously, that's why we go to low a lot. But when Natai came on, I thought, A, his physical carrying out of defence, but his exiting And in bad weather, he's able to go quite low trajectory and get big distances on it. So, you know, if we're looking for reasons why we won both games, definitely the option of 12, that left footed 12 that's able to exit and get distance, you know, might be a common theme in both.
Yeah, and then, you know, that set us up. And then when you follow that up with the Porter Jackal and, you know, and then the, you know, all the way there to the Bear try, it was just the you know, we were so worried about what La Rochelle were going to do at the start of the half, but we came out confident and we were executing. And so it was us that got the score. We got the score. We got the 17-point lead back in it, and we only went on to increase it then from there. It's like, you know, and of course, even after that try, they put it, we started out in the full, we won the penalty to the scrum. That first 5 minutes was just so, it was so dominant, and it's not something we expected, but it was, you know, it really set things up. And the other thing you pointed out there, right, was that role of Jenkins. We were wondering, it was a, you know, it was an interesting decision. We knew he'd have a specialist role. And I think that the fact that they used him in so many lineups, they went to him. He was the go-to guy. I think 10 lineups that were caught, he got 5 of them, including that one that it wasn't a 50-22, but it was a 5-meter lineout. That was a very dangerous position. We had to execute that. And they, like you say, they chose to go to him. And so it was a big role. He executed it well. It was a good 50 minutes. We had so many other options, which I would say La Rochelle prepared for. Bear, Dorsey. We could have had Conan, Maloney on there, all good lineout options. But we had Jenkins. He was the go-to guy in that pressure situation. And it was a really good shift from him. But like you say, we went on from strength to strength there and just increased the lead. And like I say, we even had to take a try out of the third quarter to give Mark something to talk about, because it was what, 35-13 after that Dan Sheehan try. And we were back at them again, Mark.
Yeah, I think it was just in my corner. I think it just hit the 60-minute. Yeah. Mark, when
but the build up, I gave you the build up as well.
The build up was there, and a cultured Westmeath right boot hit a beautiful crossfield kick to.
I wonder how the listeners getting all this Westmeath subtext to this pod. It's really fair when you tune into it. It's really fierce.
If they know Robbie Henshaw's background, Robbie Henshaw's played inter-county football, you know, so he's no slouch of a kicker as well. I'm actually surprised over the years they haven't used more as an exit option. But just to touch, before we go into that try, to touch on the Jamie Osborne, Charlie Natt, I think, it gives us, when everybody's fit, because you remember James Lowe was not playing in La Rochelle the first time around. We have four genuine exit options with Lowe, Ross Byrne or Harry Byrne or whoever 10 is on at the time, and the inside centre. And the box kick, and you're not going to be able to charge down four options off of exit plays. So I thought Leinster's exits were not only good options taking, La Rochelle were not able to go full bore on everybody. You know, the previous games, and to touch on Jenkins as well. Yeah, we had a bit of a moan at him for conceding penalties, but that's the subsequent reliance on a guy who's going to live on the edge at ruck and tackle time. He's going to concede the odd penalty here and there. Were one or two a bit silly? Yeah, granted. But as a coach, you definitely allow that to happen for what he did in other aspects of the game, in the maul and with the ruck and at the tackle area. You're not going to get massive turnovers, but he's 19 and a half stone and he's going to hit things. Sometimes in rugby, you just need big guys to hit things to slow it down. And I thought he was excellent at it. But leading up to that try, Robbie was behind for a pullback pass. And we had actually, if you look at it, we have many, many players in that sort of 15-meter on the, Tom will tell me, is it the east stand?
East stand, yeah.
They were on the east stand side. There was a lot of our players were condensed in that area. So I'm like, who's providing the width? You hoped it was low. And when the kick came over, you had acres of space. Robbie put it in space. Luckily he judged the weight of the kick. Low picked it up and you can see smile 10 feet wide as he puts it down into the corner. I'm not going to take too long on the rest of the core, because if you want to say anything, I get the shit quarter. But it was a quarter where, apart from our discipline, and I don't know if it necessarily was our ill discipline or the referee was trying to even things up, but for the next sort of 20 minutes, I had no problem with how we played. You know, the game was won. Right, lads, you now have 20 minutes. You had 55 minutes there. So go back into Tom's portion where the front row changed completely. The boys were coming off with bollocks. They'd given everything they had. All the subs were made at a pretty reasonable time for me. Josh added an extra ball carrier for us. You know, at times where we needed an extra wider carrier. And as Tom said in the first bit of the second half, you were wondering, you know, the details we have and the details Leinster coaches over the years, from Cheka to Schmidt to Leo to all the assistant coaches, the detail Leinster have in their game is top notch. And the details, so a prime example, as Tom pointed out, I'm going to go back into his, was the Aldrich Josh wannabe bit. He turns his ass into the opposition. Yes. Every coach will tell you turn your ass to the opposition, you're going to get smashed. Whereas Will Connors at the time did it, and how Josh does it is they're facing forward, and at the very last second they come out, but so they're always generating power going forward, and that's coached into them. You know, most players will want to turn and twist and show off their footwork or whatever, but that's a prime example of the detail that the Leinster coach has put into their team that you see week in, week out. But I thought we can go for the last 20 minutes is basically Leinster just going their Gandalf style, thou shalt not pass. You know, if I'm not going to make, we had a couple of missed tackles up front, but as we said before in previous games, their scramble defense and their backup defense was exemplary. You know, with a couple of cheap penalties at the scrum, I thought Milne was quite harshly done by on one, and I thought on the other side, Alato was harshly done by as well. But, you know, you saw them get into positions where you think, right, we'll get a mall try here again. And the boys just went, no, not today. They locked it out. They got their plugs in at each of the defensive malls. And when they went up into the air, we had big Joe McCarthy, who had another great game, stealing the odd line out, and they had nothing clean. We made it very dirty for them at ruck time. We made it very dirty for them to generate any power and go forward that they usually have. So some people might say the last 18 minutes or so are for the rugby purists, but I'll tell you what, I really enjoyed it. Not because of just the score. I just thought, yeah, we've conceded a couple of penalties here, but we didn't concede anything that looked like a yellow card. We were on the right side of the referee throughout, and the bench players did something positive themselves at some stage, be it a big tackle. You know, when your entire squad at 23 all contribute positively to the result of the game and the outcome, you can't be unhappy as a coach. Yeah, there's a few things to fix with going into Northampton game, but you'd rather be there than going home on whatever flight they get out of Cork, probably, or Shannon, if they went back to either of those places, even though there's a grand little airport down the road. A pretty Neon Arbor inspired, but the details in attack as well from Goodman, you could see all over it as well. And we'd have taken a 3-point, 3-0 win before it, any of us. 27-point win is beyond most of our dreams, but one you'll certainly remember for a long, long time.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I mean, it was the shitty quarter, but only because the other three were just so good. And it was a good type of shitty quarter as well, because we were happy to see home that lead. The only really thing that really happened that we could talk about, even if we wanted to, was the, there was a good choke tackle, Joe McCarthy got in on them all there, and there was a bit of handbags after it. I think Ronan Kelleher seemed to say he got some contact in the eye or something like that, and then there was a punch thrown. It was a bit silly, but that was it. Really, they built the lead, they earned the lead, they came out strong at the start of the second half and built the lead and just brought it home. So there's really not much more you can say.
I think Joe, for people who don't know, Joe McCarthy, born in Manhattan, I think Joe holding the ball up like the Statue of Liberty in the middle of that mall makes it not a shitty quarter.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the moment the game was done.
There were some great reactions. You spoke about James Lowe, a punch in the air when Ryan Baird went over, and there was Joe's answer, Joe's response coming out of that, holding the ball. And then, of course, you had Ross Burns. I think in the WhatsApp group now, we had Jay Long pointing out he's rewatching the game as we're talking. And Ross Burns' face when the camera was on him when he got player of the match. There were some great moments there. But listen, you know, we'll take it all day long. Like you say, we would have taken a 1-point win, but in the end, like you say, the final score was Leinster 40, La Rochelle 13. And so that fantastic win for Leinster puts us through to the Champions Cup semi-finals, which will take place for us on Star Wars Day, May the 4th. The venue will be Croke Park, and our opposition will be the Premiership leading Northampton Saints, who overcame the, well, let's say undercooked Bulls, 59-22 on Saturday evening. The other semi-final was decided on Sunday afternoon when a second half rally saw Toulouse comfortably dispatch Exeter by 64-26, which sets up a home semi-final on Sunday, May the 5th, against a surprise package of the quarterfinals, Harlequins, who won a bizarre match in Bordeaux. Over in the Challenge Cup, the Irish interest finally fizzled out as neither Ulster nor Connacht can make it two away wins in as many weeks, which leaves the semi-finals as Sharks v Claremont, who will play at Twickenham Stoop, while Gloucester will face Benetton at Kingsholm. And last but certainly not least, we have the incredible Irish women who recorded their first Six Nations win in 2 years with a convincing 36-5 victory over Wales at Musgrave Park with tries from Higgins, Parsons, Jones, Corrigan and player of the match Aoife Wafer. The victory has actually moved Ireland up to third on the table, and although that could change after facing the all-conquering English Red Roses next, we can definitely look at our final match against Scotland in Belfast with more confidence. Anyway, for now, many congrats to all involved. All of which brings us to our final thoughts, starting with Tom.
Yeah, no, I'll very quickly sum it up. I just think, from a supporter's point of view, look, as much hurt as we felt in the last two finals in Marseille and Dublin, I'm sure the players is on a different level altogether. But, you know, just from a supporter's point of view, I just thought it was one of those days where it was a lot of ghosts exercised out of the team. What I liked was the hurt that they felt. They were able to channel it into an unnervous performance, because it'd be very easy to get nervous, you know what I mean? And we knew there wasn't much difference between these two teams, and there's questions asked about Leinster's mentality. That was been thrown at them for the last 2 years, you know, even though there was only maybe 3 points in the final completely over 170 minutes, whatever you want to add up with injury time. So it was probably a harsh thing to be thrown at them. It could easily ended up 2-0, one the other way, or 1-1 over the course of those two finals. But yeah, just it was a sort of cathartic experience to be there in the stadium, having been in there in May, and you know, look, we're all supporting Leinster a long time. And it was a bit of a devastating loss. There's no point in putting it when you're emotionally invested in a sports team, which is a bit of a weird thing with the human psyche. But you are, that's the way it is. When you're invested in it, and your team, you know, gives you just so much payback, so much joy on a performance like that, and you're delighted for them. And as you rightly mentioned, just Ross Burns' reaction to getting mad at the match, you know, there was a lot of emotion there in his face, and he was trying to hide it. Just how much it meant to him and the players. And look, we know it's only a quarter final, but you have to enjoy the journey. You know, we all know there's two matches, and they can wait for next week, but you have to enjoy the journey. You know, I mean, just because we lost the final last year doesn't mean I didn't enjoy putting 40 points in Toulouse in the semi final. You know, that's the way sport is. So we can look at it in block by block. But yeah, look, it was just a fantastic occasion. Lansdowne sold out. really quality, two quality teams going at each other. You know, I mean, this is they're the matches you wait for all season when you're in the rain in January watching Zebra or Dragons, with all due respect. You know, this is where you trod your miles going to these games. You know, this team will bring you on a journey towards the rest of the season. So yeah, absolutely delighted for the win, and we'll worry about Northampton in Crow Park in 3 weeks' time.
Absolutely. And Mark?
Change is good. You know, you're asking a 29-year-old out of half to play a different style of game for the good of the team. And you've gone out and you've got a double World Cup winning head coach to help change the defensive system. And he said it would take 14 games, and it took around 12-13 for a couple of weeks ago. It was a couple of lapses against Leicester, but there was very few lapses today. And you know, you're asking a squad to change their mentality come Rook time, to change their mentality and how they play a defense, because it's not as if we've been struggling season by season. You know, we're always at the final, semi-finals, end of things. And yeah, we needed something different to get us over the La Rochelle hump, you know. And the two things in the game that really stood out for me, one was what Tom said, but, you know, and to borrow his phrase a little bit, is I literally screamed, we have exercised the demons, when that scrum of La Rochelle was on skates. You know, as a former prop, there's a bit of love for Furlong and Porter. And not only did the scrummies their hearts out, but they hit every ruck as if it was the last ruck on earth. And to ask guys to do that, this is where that 23-man squad came in, because you could see them when they're coming off the pitch, they were all knackered because they'd put a massive, massive shift in. And that result was deserved. Wasn't lucky. Took a long, long, hard... a lot of time to get that defensive system right. We were all moaning at the start. Tipped the hat to Richard. Wasn't too convinced at the start of the season with some of the Glasgow performances, for sure, and he's right. And patience worked out here. As Tom said, enjoy the journey and get back to Croker. The last time we played there as an Irish team, we did okay. And hopefully something similar against an English team will come our way in 3 weeks' time.
Absolutely. Well, listen, lads, that's Brian. We're going to leave it there. Many thanks again to Mark and Tom for joining me, and I hope to have you back on again soon. Thanks, lads.
Pleasure as always.
Thank you.
As for our next batch of Harping, look out for our 80-plus column during the week. Then we turn our attention back to the URC and Leinster South African tour. We'll have a preview of our match against the Lions on Friday, and we'll be recording the Wrap Pod on Sunday evening. As ever, keep up with our content at harpingonrugby.com and across all our social media channels. The links are in the program notes. In the meantime, stay safe, everyone. Slán.